The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Wasn't that great? Paddy Maloney getting an award from the King of Spain. That's great news. And celebrating his 80th birthday this week. Now, every Friday, we invite people in to tell us about the soundtrack to their lives. Today, we're joined by novelist and actor Claudia Carroll. Good afternoon, Claudia.
Thank you so much, Ray. Good to have me on.
Great to have you on. Is this your 14th or 15th novel?
15th. Can you believe that? Wow. Yeah, it just came out last week and it's gone onto the bestseller list at number 4 this week. So
congratulations.
Doing the happy dance. But do you know, you take nothing for granted, you know how it is.
Yeah.
Every book, you're only as good as your last book, really.
And is it a book a year for you?
Yeah, it's like doing The Leaving. Every year is the nearest way I could describe it to you. Every single year. But this one was very special to me because it's
The Secrets of Primrose Square.
Yeah.
And I read the bump on it. So you've all these people's lives in the square.
That's right.
I would imagine
connected geographically.
Yes.
So I've got the book opens with a character called Susan, a middle-aged woman. And she's just, it's kind of a mystery storyline. She's standing in the lashing rain, huddled under an umbrella in the middle of the night. And there's a light on in a house that she's standing in front of. And she's just staring like fixatedly at this teenage boy's bedroom window. And you're reading this and you think, oh my God, is this some kind of inappropriate crush going on? You know, what's happening? And you realised this woman has lost her daughter to suicide, and she blames this particular kid.
Ah,
she thinks,
right,
you were my daughter's friend and you may have been exonerated, but I know the truth and you know the truth, and I will never forgive and I will never forget.
I read that first chapter and I'm pulled in straight away.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there is a lighter storyline going on in the house next door, because you have to balance the two, So it's about an older, kind of a super ager, as they call these, you know, a character in her late 60s, and she's got an only son who's in a bit of financial difficulties, and he's a gambler, and he just basically wants his mum. It's an awful thing to say, but just his back is to the wall money wise. His mother is sitting on a lot of property. She's a wealthy widow, and he just basically wants to inherit the house as quickly and with as minimum fuss as possible, and so he can pay off his debts and happy days. But she has very different ideas about how she's going to be spending her retirement. So that's kind of the comic storyline, because you always have to have a few.
The Secrets of Primrose Square. And it's your 15th book. Okay, now thanks for coming in. You know how this works.
Yeah.
So it's, we go right back to the beginning. So you were born in
Dublin. Yeah. Oh, you wanted me to say a year, did you? Oh, right, ages ago. I'm a 60s kid.
Yeah.
A late 60s kid, I know, yes. Well, just put it this way. I had a big birthday there not so long ago.
I think they'll be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
How was that for you?
Uneventful. My birthday present to myself was literally underfloor heating. Not even in my own house, in my mother's house. I thought we can all enjoy that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who was in the family with you?
I'm the only girl with boys. And it's funny, you know, you always spot an only daughter in adult life, I think, because when we were kids, and only, I not having grown up with a sister, no one ever, you know, we never had to share dolls or toys. And as teenagers, nobody messed with your makeup or, you know, so I think I can always spot an only daughter in adult life because our female friends become our sisters.
Uh-huh.
We get that close because we never had that.
Mm.
So it's an interesting thing.
And were you, did you feel you were treated differently than your two brothers?
My parents would disagree, but I did. I think, you know, maybe it was just off the time, but I think for my brothers, they had a lot of freedom growing up. And in terms of, you know, when we were teenagers and you wanted to just go out and, you know, when you're older. But for me, it was like living under the Taliban. It was like, you know, where are you going? Who are you going out with? What time will you be home at?
Yeah.
And that skirt is far too short. You know, go upstairs and wash that muck off your face. This kind of thing, you know.
Of course, parents are more protective of girls, aren't they?
Do you think?
Yeah.
Are you like that, Ray?
What?
Would you be like that?
I think my daughter is well capable of taking care of herself.
Is she?
She's that type of person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the moment, I'm more protective of my son. We'll see how it pans out. What's your first living memory? Not to do with sound.
I remember very vividly, my younger brother being born. very vividly. And there's about 2.5 years between us. And I remember wanting to call him Toby after a dog we had at the time, yeah. And being laughed at and getting very upset because I didn't get my way. And thinking now every birthday I say to him, you know, Toby's kind of a cool name. Maggie Smith has a son who's an actor called Toby Stevens.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a really rocking name.
It's a nice Toby name. Yes.
But that was our dog. So
and what was he named in the end?
Paddy.
Paddy, right. Yeah. Toby's a little bit more exotic, isn't it?
I would have thought so, yeah. No one listens to you when you're 2.5.
They don't.
No.
No. I'm going to play, because Wandley Wagon is in everybody's.
It meant dinner time.
Yes.
Yeah, we were a very TV orientated family. And Wandley Wagon and Crossroads. Do you remember Crossroads, Ray?
I played the theme tune.
There you go. And you know, it was so funny because they had, they would play the rolling credits at the end at whatever time, 6:30 or whatever time it was. And it was set in a motel, in the UK, somewhere like, I'd say outside Birmingham, I think was roughly the location.
Yeah.
But then they would play the credits and then there would be another scene afterwards. And in the Carroll household, that meant dinner is on the table. The theme from Crow. It's like a Pavlovian response, actually. I hear that theme tune and I get hungry.
I can see you salivating there.
Yeah.
And you all sat down around the table together.
Yeah.
What did your mum and dad do?
My dad's a doctor, yeah, and practiced until recently. Yeah, till very recently.
And both your parents are still alive.
Yeah, and well, thank God, yeah.
Yeah.
And they can enjoy the underfloor heating now in the, the newly done house. They better.
So that was your present to yourself for them, sort of thing. Yeah.
For me 50th, yeah. Well, it'll last longer than a party, put it that way.
Can you remember the first time you entertained people?
Like as an adult?
No, as a child.
Oh,
You were,
Yeah, we were a house actually that entertained a lot. I think we
don't mean throwing a dinner party now. I mean singing or something like that.
Oh, okay, oh, yes, I do remember vividly that myself and my friends would, whenever there was kids around playing, for me the evening, it wasn't a play date, as you'd say now, unless there was a show at the end of it. And this involved living room curtains, getting dressed up in your mother's nightie, basically. And the important part, charging people in to the living room, charging your own family to see you stand in front of the curtains with makeup on, laughing.
Right.
Pretty much, yeah. But I took them very seriously.
And maybe singing this song. So that was the first song.
Right, I can guarantee you, if my mother is listening, she is now crying. I can guarantee you. Yeah, I think it was the first song I actually knew all of the words to. I don't even know when it came out. But it's just such a catchy song.
Yeah,
and
it's an odd one. I think that it was a hit in America more than in the UK.
Okay.
It was released in the 1970s.
It was a real one-hit wonder.
Yeah, for Melanie.
Person, I think, yeah.
The roller skate song, and it was number one on the Billboard Hot 100 singles during December 1971 and January 1972.
Oh, you've done your research.
But here's the memory I have of that tune. It's this.
Yeah, I remember that one as well, yeah.
That was the worst.
It was just the one as a kid, as a small kid. It was just the only song I knew all of the words to.
And did you go to a Billy Barry type thing?
Betty Ann Norton, who's still absolutely
and
going
were they,
strong.
Were they competitors?
Not really. No,
rivals.
Betty Ann. No, because Billy Barry was, God be good to her, but she was amazing. She was all about singing and dancing. And her kids, I was very jealous of the Billy Barrys because they were always in the panto every year. And it's funny, I have a godson now, Oscar, who's, I think they're just going to have a heart time keeping him off the stage.
Right.
And I took him to the panto this year and I could see it in him. He just was hungry, was angry that he wasn't on the stage.
But
Betty Ann's was more about doing shows every year, but also about the feshes. The feshes were a very big deal in our house.
Irish dancing and...
Poetry, improvisation, mime, all of those really useful
so
skills.
So speech and drama
speech
more
and
than
drama,
singing
yeah.
and dancing. Yeah.
And, I remember there was a fesh you'd do in the old Father Matthew Hall, and you could have 130 kids on a kind of dusty hall on a hot afternoon, all doing the same poem.
Oh no.
And the audience
again
is full of mammies.
Yes. All waiting for their little
exactly.
dear, their little
exactly,
angel to do
yeah.
it. Yeah. What sort of a child were you?
Show busy. precocious, irritating, very irritating. I say to my friends now, none of them would have given me the time of day. It was awful, actually. And I was a bit really teacher's pet in school. Oh, I was horrible, Ray. You hated me. I wouldn't have been pals with Clelia Murphy or any of that gang now if I'd been still that way. I was really up the front, shiny apple for the teacher type. Annoying, just a really annoying kid.
And was there any self-awareness of that at the time?
I think when you grow up the only girl with brothers, that it gets kicked out of you pretty quickly.
All right.
But and it's kind of, you look back and you laugh.
And you went to primary school, Loretta on the Green.
Yeah, same school right the way through. And secondary.
So that's on Stephen's Green.
So yeah, on the Green. Yeah, you know, they take primary and secondary. So I never changed. And then I went back there to teach drama as well. And actually I saw one of the pupils who I had taught in the Green on stage in the Peacock last night. So it's just, there's a lovely sort of full circle feel to it.
And was there a tradition of drama in?
Very much so. Yeah. The Green is it's a fantastic school culturally, like, because it's city centre. So they excel at drama, debating, music, choir, all of the, you know, reading, literature, all of that.
I'm sure for a day out.
But I think for sporty, for girls in my year who were sporty and athletic, we just didn't have the facilities, really. Yes, they do now, but just in my day, I'm going back a long way.
But just, for example, would you have gone out to, you know, the National Art Gallery or the museum?
All the time. And shows.
And it was just there on the doorstep.
Yes. Exactly.
It wasn't a big deal.
It's not a big deal. So I think, you know, culturally it was very, very strong. But just, I used, you know, even at past people's reunions, the kids who were athletic, we just hadn't the facilities.
Unless you ran around Stephen's Green. You could swim in the pond there.
You could,
a few ducks.
Yeah, that happened the year.
And what about as a teenager then? Still the same, were you?
I got the corners kind of knocked off me by then a bit. Yeah, but still very much into drama and all of that, and still doing Betty Ann's.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the soundtracks I picked were real 80s music and
because the
90s, a lot of that.
Well, here.
Oh, God, oh, Ray.
That and
Irene Carriage. That was my favourite television show.
Yeah.
And the Leg Warmers. And it was on BBC after Top of the Pops, which used to go out on a Thursday. And it was just the exuberance, the joyousness. And you'd see these kids and they went to this unheard of thing, a school of the arts, an actual school where you could do this. And it was counted as lessons. And every episode would pretty much end with all of the kids dancing on the roofs of cars on Fifth Avenue.
Like La La Land, the opening scene from La La Land.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I want to go there.
Yeah. But they did exist.
Now,
I remember going to one of those. Not going, but there was Brenda Dunhu's brother. Can't remember his name. He attended one of those schools in New York.
No way.
And back in the early 90s.
They're a very gifted family.
Yes.
Those Donahues.
When I was on children's television, we went over and that was one of the stories we did, was his story.
Wow.
You were on children's television as well,
were
you?
I was, yeah. I was. That's how I started here. On a show called, this will really take you back now, The Rimini Riddle.
Oh, the Rimini Riddle.
It was 100 years ago. And,
was that a scale game?
Myself and Tara Flynn were in it. No, it was English. And we were sort of doing voiceover work really more than anything. But I played this, orphaned kids who lived with their awful aunt in a boarding house. And the aunt just was so not cut out to be a surrogate parent of any kind and was sour and awful and mood swings and vile, really. So I think I was only about 24, but I've been playing, you know, elderly middle-aged crones for a very long time.
You're very hard on yourself. You're very hard on
yourself. But it was great crack. Yeah.
And is that where Fair City came from?
Well,
then?
Fair City came from actually just being in the RTE canteen, you know?
Don't say that.
That's a terrible thing to say. But I just was, we were doing the Rimini Riddle and we would record 4 days a week or whatever. And the producer of Fair City, who I knew, and he'd seen me in a play that I was doing, and he just said, look, you know, I just bumped into him in the canteen. He just said, look, I've this part coming into Fair City. It's not an audition because the part's so small. It's a week's work. It's like just, you know, this character, Paul Brennan, played by Tony Tormey, still in it, has a new girlfriend, comes in and she's just awful. She's snooty and superior and just looks down her nose and everyone, what do you think? And I said, yep. So, you know, I'm not going to turn down a week's work. Of course I'll do it. You know, actors, if the answer is yes, what is the question? Can I horse ride? Of course I can. Yeah, easy. And that was it. So I went in for a week and stayed for about 22 years.
And so you're still recurring. You're not getting killed off, frankly.
I describe it as a bit like, have you ever seen Wicked, the musical? You know, Elphaba with the green paint?
I wouldn't know it in detail now.
Okay. Elphaba's the green, who sings Defying Gravity and kind of goes in her broomstick and stirs the cauldron every now and then. But I think like Elphaba, Nicola is misunderstood.
Yes. And of course, somebody says, when did she meet that lion cheat, Paul Brennan? How many women has he been with in Fair City over the years?
How long have you got? Yeah, that's a whole other programme.
Yeah.
That's just a whole other programme.
And you were the snooty, aloof, snobby.
Yeah, and I was the kind of character that the audience just, they wanted him to be with this lovely character called Helen Doyle, who was in the show at the time, played by Ciara Carroll. And this urban myth went around that we were sisters, which we weren't. But we always got on great. And they wanted Paul to end up with her. But Nicola was just having none of that. And she just wanted a ring on her finger. And that was the storyline.
Do people get mixed up between fact and fiction?
I do it myself. I remember being out here and meeting Liz Dawn, who played Vera Duckworth.
Yes.
And I couldn't get my head around people calling her Liz. I mean, she's Vera.
Yeah.
Like, when the character's going into your sitting room 4 nights a week, it just takes on a different reality for you. But I remember Vera Duckworth to me and Bill Tommy, I think, who played Jack Duckworth. And they were on a chat show out here. And my brain was melted at people calling them by different names when they were Vera and Jack.
I know it's a cliched question about the reaction you got from the public when you were playing Nicola.
Oh.
It was negative mainly, wasn't it?
Mainly, yeah. But do you think that's the character?
But do you think that affected you then as a real life? I just laugh,
you know. Yeah. And then most people, I think, are really nice about it, and they just go, oh, "You give Paul a terrible time," and you know, and it would be a slag more than anything. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, every now and then, in situations where there'd be a lot of drink on board, like if you're in a nightclub or something, and you might get somebody just the odd, you know, messer who'd come up and have a go and would think that you were actually like that. And you want to say, no, it's fiction.
So the acting was going along and then the writing was going along in parallel.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I wrote my first three books in the dressing rooms of Fair City when I was meant to be learning my lines.
Well, you did do both expertly, multitasking. Yeah, and I read a quote from you there saying about, you know, the best thing, you know, I suppose, draw on your own experience. And what was the one about Manhattan?
Meet Me in Manhattan. That's a true story. So it's about catfishing. Do you know what catfishing is?
Yes, it's where it's never happened to me now, but
I should hope not. No,
but it's where you go online and the person you think you're meeting isn't
horrendous.
The person at all.
Yeah. And actually that story kind of feeds into one of the strands of storylines in Secrets of Primrose Square. It's just that thing of there's been so much recently about data and our data on Facebook and all that. And it's just that you really don't know. It's very easy to set up a fake profile and it's very easy to dupe people. And there are people out there who are, you know, in the dark web who will just suck you in. And catfishing is people who go on these online dating sites. Now, you hear great, very successful stories about online dating and people who've met their husbands and long-term partners. Mm. But catfishing is where you have someone who goes on and who, this is based on a true story. A producer who worked in the UK and who met a guy online who lived in Wales and who was an Afghan war veteran and who looked after his brother who was special needs. And this woman was messaging him and messages turned into phone calls. And every time they'd arranged to meet, he would cancel on her at the last minute. But it was always a really plausible excuse. It was always, I have to bring my brother to the hospital. Okay. I've got, you know, something that would make you feel awful for giving out.
Yeah.
And after, you know, the third or fourth time, she began to smell a rat and she thought, you know, with her producer hat on, she thought maybe there's a story here. Travelled to this very remote village in Wales, tracked down her would-be paramour that she'd met on the internet, and it turned out to be a 14-year-old girl. Now, could you make that up, right? Like, it's just astonishing.
How has your experience been online dating?
You couldn't make, it's like the story you were telling earlier about the message in a bottle.
Right, go on.
Real life Trump's fiction. True story, right?
That's the quote. Real life Trump's
real
fiction.
Life sorry,
that's
every your time, quote. Every
yes.
time.
Yes.
But this is a true story. I met this guy online. It was going to be a coffee date and that's all fine. And this, you know, was a teacher. This guy's a teacher, all very respectable and everything. And we were having it, you know, because coffee's, you know, it's daytime. It's half hour.
Yes.
That's it. You know, it's all
no
fine.
Alcohol,
you're surrounded.
Yes.
No, absolutely not. And anyway, he was telling me about his daughter, who's like maybe 12, the age of your daughter, but he's estranged from the mum, and the daughter was in Seattle. And he was saying, oh, you know, she's got a confirmation coming up, and I just really want to get to it. And I've said, well, why don't you go? And he said, well, it's the fare, like the airfare is like €450. And he just leaned forward and said, I don't know you very long, but you couldn't just give me maybe 200, and I'm going to give back to you now at the end of the month, but it's just for the airfare to go and see his daughter, you know, this heartstrings.
How long were you into the date?
20 minutes.
So I went for a loan.
I got out of there. I thought, you know, I've pals 30 years. I wouldn't ask them for a lend of money, or wouldn't ask me either. But I got out of there, and I was just started thinking, and this is years ago now, and I just thought, I said no, but how many other women was he in touch with that would have maybe said, oh, your poor daughter, of course you have to go. Yeah. And if it hadn't been that, maybe I'm wrong, maybe it was completely legitimate, but even I smelled a rat.
It probably was legitimate, but even that, knowing somebody for 20 minutes and asking them for a loan.
A lot of money, like a serious amount of money. Yeah.
So how long ago was that?
Oh, a few years. But it would just give you, it would burn you, wouldn't it? Yes. Like, I'm not doing that again. Now, having said that, you hear people who have great success with the online dating, but I tell you, it's a fiction author's dream, because you just couldn't make up some of the stuff.
That happens to you. Look, we're nearly out of time. I'll give you the choice now of stuff to pick from. So many clips here. Oh, God, we have When Harry Met Sally. We have the lovely bit at the end with Meghan Ryan and Billy Crystal, where he has that lovely monologue about why.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
We have
that's
that.
Gorgeous, yeah.
And then I know you're a big royal fan and a big fan of Lady Diana, but that brings us into sort of sad places. So
okay, something bouncy for a bank holiday.
Yes, okay.
You know.
When Harry Met Sally, we're not going to play the fake thing in the cafe.
Okay.
From When Harry Met Sally. It's too much for afternoon radio.
Exactly.
Yeah. So here we go. So it's Meghan Ryan and Billy Crystal from, this is the final scene from Harry Met Sally.
How about this way? I love that you get cold when it's 71 degrees out. I love that it takes you an hour and a half to order a sandwich. I love that you get a little crinkle above your nose when you're looking at me like I'm nuts. I love that after I spend a day with you, I can still smell your perfume on my clothes. And I love that you are the last person I want to talk to before I go to sleep at night. And it's not because I'm lonely, and it's not because it's New Year's Eve. I came here tonight because when you realize you want to spend the rest of your life with somebody, you want the rest of your life to start as soon as possible.
Just like you, Harry, you say things like that and you make it impossible for me to hate you.
Do you know who wrote that? Do you know who wrote it?
Efren.
Nora Efren.
Efren, yes.
Yeah, and Rob Reiner directed it.
Yeah, she's an amazing writer.
She's passed away, I think, since, but it's just a stunning piece of work.
Just on Harry there, because just on the royals, before we go.
Oh, you mean Prince Harry?
Yes.
All right, okay. Did you watch the wedding?
I watched bits of it.
Okay.
I was sort of working. I was working that day. But Meghan and Harry, you think they've a challenge, do you?
I hope I'm wrong, because we all love him and we all love her. Like, is she or is she not the coolest woman? Right. She's just so cool.
Right.
But I just, I hope I'm wrong. I worry a little bit. It was a long distance relationship. Did you ever do a long distance relationship?
No.
And it was only a year before they got engaged.
Have you done a long distance relationship?
A long time ago, but it's all very heady and airports, and it's not real life. It's not put out the bins. But I just think if you look at his life since he got married, it hasn't changed one jot. He lives in the same house, surrounded by his family, in Kensington Palace. He does the same job. Her life has changed unrecognisably.
Beyond recognition,
I hope I'm wrong. I hope they're still together for their 50th wedding anniversary, but I have concerns. I mean, if you look at Kate Middleton, she was very quietly on the scene for 7 years before she got married.
Yeah.
So she knew exactly what she was getting into.
Yeah.
And she wanted it. But she knew so well.
Listen, if ever we're doing anything on the royals, we'll have you back in.
I
believe if you're going to do Mastermind, that would be your chosen subject.
Well, it's like soap opera, except the best soap opera, because we don't have to pay for it.
Did you watch Love Island?
No.
No.
I was afraid to. I was afraid to get sucked in.
Right.
Did you?
Many people did. No, I watched three. I can take things and leave them. I don't have an addictive personality. Okay. Not saying that you do. So, The Secrets of Primrose Square is book number 15 from Claudia Carroll. Claudia, thanks so much for coming
pleasure.
In.
Pleasure. Thank you so much. And have a lovely
weekend.
Holiday.
Yes, great weekend. Yeah. I wasn't telling I was going on holiday. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.